The Duke of Ashford looked straight through his wife as if she were nothing more than the air he breathed, and every guest in the ballroom noticed. Alara stood near the marble pillar, her gloved hands clasped tightly in front of her, a practiced smile frozen on her lips. His cold gray eyes had passed over her without a flicker of recognition. He was dancing with Lady Cordelia Vance, beautiful, polished, the woman everyone whispered he should have married. And his wife, the Duchess of Ashford, was left to stand alone, invisible, as the music swirled around her. A low murmur rippled through the crowd. Alara caught the words merchant's daughter and unworthy before she forced herself to look away. Her chest ached with a hollow, familiar pain. She had been waiting, she realized, for a love that was never meant to bloom. She had been a fool to believe that the ice in his eyes might one day melt. It had been this way from the very beginning, from the moment she walked down the aisle of the Ashford Chapel 6 months before, clutching a bouquet of pale roses and a desperate, fragile hope. Her father had barely been able to stand at the altar, his health ravaged by a long illness, but his eyes had held a sorrow she could not name. He had whispered only one thing to her that morning. "Forgive me, my darling. One day you will understand." At the time, she thought he meant the simple sadness of giving his daughter away. She did not know then that her marriage was not a union, but a quiet, brutal surrender. The Duke of Ashford, Alexander Ashford, had proposed with cold formality. There had been no courtship, no gentle words. He had come to their London townhouse, sat across from her father, and laid out the terms as though negotiating a trade agreement. Alara had been called in afterward, and she still remembered the way his gaze had scraped over her without warmth. He had said, "You will be Duchess. You will want for nothing. That is all." She had wanted to ask him why he was doing this, why he would marry a woman he clearly did not love, but the answer arrived soon enough through the whispers of servants and the sharp edges of his silence. The Ashford family had suffered a devastating financial blow 5 years earlier. Their merchant fleet, the lifeblood of their fortune, had been destroyed in a series of sabotage attacks. The old Duke and his heir had died in a carriage accident months later, leaving Alexander, the second son, to inherit a crumbling legacy and a bitter, festering wound. And the blame for that sabotage, whispered in every drawing room, had been laid at the feet of the Fairchild Trading Company, Alara's family. Alexander Ashford believed her father had orchestrated his ruin, and yet he had still chosen to marry her. She had not understood it at first, not until she overheard a conversation between her husband and his uncle, Lord Mortimer, a week after the wedding. "Control her, and you control the last of their trade contracts," Mortimer had said in a silky voice. "The Fairchild name will be scrubbed from history, and their wealth will flow into Ashford coffers. It is the revenge you deserve, nephew." Standing in the shadows of the corridor, Alara's heart had splintered. She was not a bride. She was a trophy seized in a cold war she had never known existed. And the man she had already begun to love, despite his distance, had married her to destroy the last remnants of her family. The realization should have broken her, and for many nights it nearly did. But Alara Fairchild, no, Alara Ashford, was not the fragile, trembling girl she had once been. She had secrets of her own. Her father, before his mind had grown clouded, had told her the truth with a trembling voice. The Fairchild Company had been innocent, framed by someone within the Ashford circle. He had no proof, only a series of letters that had vanished. But he had made her promise to protect herself, to never stop searching for the truth. Marrying the Duke, as painful as it was, had placed her inside the lion's den. She had agreed to the union not out of obedience, but out of a fierce, quiet determination to clear her family's name and to keep her dying father and young sister safe from the Duke's retribution. The Duke had demanded her hand in exchange for forgiving a massive, crippling debt her father owed him. She had walked into the cage willingly, her eyes wide open, her hope buried deep beneath layers of survival. The first months of marriage were a slow, suffocating descent into invisibility. She had tried in those early days to reach him. She learned his favorite blend of tea, a smoky Lapsang Soochong, and had it prepared every evening in the library. He never acknowledged it. She wore the Ashford family colors, deep blue and silver, hopping to please him. He did not notice. She asked him gentle questions about his day, his horses, his love of old maps. He answered with clipped, distant words and turned away. Once she found him in the portrait gallery late at night, standing before a painting of his elder brother. His face was unguarded, raw with grief. She stepped forward, her heart aching for him. "I am so sorry," she whispered. He spun around, his expression hardening into stone. "Your sympathy is the last thing I need from you. Do not pretend to care about my losses when your blood caused them." He walked out, leaving her frozen in the cold candlelight. That was the night she stopped hopping. Ilara pulled back. She stopped arranging her hair in the elaborate styles the Tun favored, stopped waiting for him at dinner, stopped lingering in hallways hopping for a chance encounter. She filled her hours with quiet purpose. She walked the grounds of Ashford Hall, learning the names of every tenant farmer, every servant. She discovered that the estate, despite its grand facade, was struggling. The lingering effects of the financial blow meant that many cottages needed repairs, and the orphanage in the village had been neglected. She began to act. She used the small allowance she was given to buy supplies, to mend roofs, to visit the sick. She did not seek permission. She simply did what needed to be done. And she kept her other work hidden. In the vast library, she sifted through old ledgers and correspondence, searching for any trace of the scheme that had destroyed the Ashford ships. She wrote letters under a false name to retired sea captains. She slowly, painstakingly, pieced together a truth that pointed not at her father, but at someone much closer to the Duke. Lord Mortimer, the Duke's uncle, the man who always seemed to be hovering, always so concerned about the dukedom's future, always quick to whisper poison about the Fairchilds into Alexander's ear. Ilara found an old invoice, tucked inside a book on navigation, showing a payment to a known saboteur, a payment authorized by a shell company that traced back to Mortimer. Her hands trembled as she held the paper. She had the proof. But she knew that presenting it to her husband now would be useless. He would accuse her of forgery, of desperation. She needed more, and she needed him to trust her, even just a little. That seemed an impossible dream. Then the new physician arrived, and everything shifted again. Dr. Henry Whitmore was young, earnest, and gentle-eyed. He had been hired to care for Ilara's father, who now lived in a quiet dower house on the estate's edge, his mind fading like twilight. Henry was diligent, kind, and he spoke to Ilara not as a duchess, but as a woman bearing a heavy burden. He would find her in the garden, her hands covered in soil, and he would not flinch at the dirt beneath her nails. He would simply smile and say, "You have done more for this land than anyone in a century, Your Grace. It is an honor to witness." There was no impropriety, only a gentle, steady admiration that Ilara had not felt in so long it made her throat tight. One afternoon, as she sat on a stone bench overlooking the rose garden, exhaustion washed over her and she fell asleep. She did not see Henry lift a soft blanket from his medical bag and drape it over her shoulders. She did not see the Duke, walking back from a ride, stop dead at the edge of the lawn, but Henry saw him. He met the Duke's darkening gaze and simply nodded, then stepped away, leaving the Duchess to rest. That evening, Alexander appeared at the door of her chambers for the first time in weeks. His voice was tight, his jaw rigid. "You will not spend time alone with that physician again. It is unseemly." Ilara, who had been brushing out her hair, looked at his reflection in the mirror. A spark of something hot and defiant flickered in her chest. "He was tending to my father, and he has shown me nothing but respect, which is more than I can say for many in this house." The Duke stepped closer, and she saw a flash of something unfamiliar in his eyes, something that looked almost like pain. "I am your husband. It is my name you carry." "A name you gave me as a punishment," she said quietly. "I have not forgotten." He had no reply. He simply stared at her for a long moment, then left, the door closing with a soft, damning click. Ilara pressed her hand to her chest, feeling her heart pound. She had seen it. Jealousy. It was not love, she was not that naive, but it was a crack in the armor. She did not know if she should be glad or terrified. The tension between them became a living thing. At dinners, now held in stifling silence, she sensed his eyes on her when he thought she was not looking. She began to dress with a quiet, understated elegance, not for him but for herself, because she was the Duchess of Ashford and she would no longer shrink. The servants noticed the shift. The villagers, who adored her, began to speak of her grace in his hearing. She was becoming a force, and Alexander Ashford, a man accustomed to control, found himself utterly disarmed. One rainy evening, he found her in the library, poring over maps and papers she quickly tried to conceal. "What are you doing?" he demanded, his voice sharper than intended. She looked up, her eyes weary but steady, trying to understand the past, so that the future might be different. He walked to the table, his gaze falling on the name Mortimer scribbled on a scrap of paper. His expression turned stony. "Are you still attempting to spin your web of lies? My uncle has been the only loyal anchor in my life. I will not have you slander him." "And I will not stop searching for the truth," she whispered, "even if you hate me for it." He swept the papers to the floor, his breath ragged. "You are playing a dangerous game, Alara. I could send your father and sister away with a single word. I could make your life here a living tomb." She stood slowly, her hands trembling but her voice iron. "It already is, Alexander. It has been since the day I arrived. You have given me nothing but silence and ice, and yet I have stayed, I have worked, I have loved this estate and its people as you would not. Do you think I fear a living tomb? I have been living in one beside you for 6 months." She walked past him, her shoulder nearly brushing his chest, and left him standing in the scattered wreckage of her research. He did not follow, but that night he did not sleep. Her words coiled around his heart like a cold serpent. "I have been living in one beside you." He had wanted her to suffer, had wanted to see the pride of the Fairchild name humbled, but somewhere along the way, the sight of her bowed head no longer brought satisfaction. It brought a hollow ache he refused to name. The turning point came with a whisper in the dark. A week later, Alara finally found what she had been hunting. In a forgotten strongbox in the attic of the West Wing, hidden beneath moth-eaten curtains, lay a bundle of letters between Lord Mortimer and a shipyard foreman. The letters detailed, in chilling clarity, the plan to plant explosive charges aboard the Ashford flagship. The date coincided with the tragedy. And the final letter contained a line that stole her breath. "Once the old Duke and his heir are dealt with, the younger son will be easy to control or remove." Mortimer had not only framed the Fairchilds. He had orchestrated the carriage accident that killed Alexander's father and brother. And he was still plotting, waiting for the moment to claim the dukedom. Alara clutched the letters to her chest, her mind racing. She had to warn Alexander immediately, but even as she hurried down the staircase, she heard voices in the main hall. Lord Mortimer was there, his smooth voice drifting up. "My dear nephew, you look tired. You must rest. The estate's burdens are heavy. If anything were to happen to you, I would be lost without you." She froze. She could not burst in and wave the letters in front of Mortimer. He would destroy her evidence and probably have her locked away. She retreated silently, her heart pounding, and resolved to wait until Alexander was alone. But fate had other plans. That very night, unable to sleep, she saw a shadow slip past her window toward the Duke's private study. A man, cloaked, carrying a dark object. Her blood ran cold. The letters had spoken of a final plan, a removal. She did not think. She pulled on her dressing gown and followed, her feet silent on the cold stones. She saw the figure try the study door, locked. Then the man moved toward the library, where she knew a connecting door led to the Duke's chambers. He was going to attack Alexander in his sleep. Alara did not scream. She could not risk alerting the house and giving the attacker time to flee or harm. Instead, she grabbed a heavy silver candlestick from a side table. As the man worked the lock, she crept up behind him and brought the candlestick down with all her strength. He crumpled with a grunt, but not before he lashed out with a small knife, slicing across her forearm. Pain seared through her. Hot and shocking. She bit down on her lip to keep from crying out, dragging the unconscious man into a dark alcove and shoving a tapestry over him. She found the key to the study, locked both doors, and then, clutching her bleeding arm, stumbled back to her own room. She cleaned the wound as best she could, binding it with strips torn from an old petticoat. She told no one. The next morning, the intruder was discovered by a footman, groggy and confused, and promptly arrested. He was a hired ruffian with no known connection to the household, but Alara knew. She tucked the letters into her bodice and waited for her moment. But the strain was too much. The blood loss, the sleepless nights, the relentless emotional weight, it all converged. 2 days later, while walking through the orchard, the world tilted and Alara collapsed into the grass. A maid found her, pale as milk, the hidden wound on her arm now an angry red streak of infection. Alexander was in the stables when the frantic groom reached him. The words hit him like a physical blow. The Duchess has fallen. The physician fears for her life. He did not remember running. He only remembered the sight of her so still in the great bed, her dark hair spread across the pillow like a shroud. Henry Whitmore was there, his face grave. "She has been hiding an injury, Your Grace. A deep laceration, badly infected. She has been working herself to the bone and fighting an illness she never mentioned. I am doing everything I can, but she is burning with fever." The Duke sank into the chair beside the bed. For the first time in years, his hands shook. He looked at her face, really looked, and saw the faint shadows beneath her lashes, the delicate strength in her jaw. He saw the woman who had mended his tenant cottages, who had brought laughter to the orphanage, who had faced his coldness day after day and never once complained. He saw the wife he had treated as an enemy, and the realization was a blade twisting in his chest. "Leave us," he rasped. Henry hesitated, then nodded and departed. Alone, Alexander reached for her hand. It was so small, so fever-warm. "Alara," he whispered, his voice breaking, "please stay with me." He pressed his forehead to her fingers, and the tears he had not shed since his brother's death finally fell. He did not leave her side for 2 days. Servants brought him broth he did not drink. He held vigil, speaking to her in low, desperate murmurs, and while she slept, he found the letters. They had slipped from a hidden pocket in her gown, now laid on the nightstand. He unfolded them with numb fingers. As his eyes traced the damning words, as he recognized his uncle's elegant script outlining murder and betrayal, the world he had built on vengeance collapsed. Mortimer, the sabotage, the accident. All of it, and she, his wife, had been trying to save him while he spat venom at her. Then he found the small, leather-bound journal tucked beneath her pillow. He knew he should not read it. He did anyway. Her handwriting was graceful, but the words were filled with a quiet, unshakable love. She wrote of her father's innocence, of her secret search of the night she had stopped the intruder in the library. She described the pain of the wound, the terror of being discovered, and her hope that one day he might look at her without hate. One line burned into his soul: "I know he will never love me. But I will protect him anyway, because the man I married is not the cruel mask he wears. He is the lost boy I see grieving in the portrait gallery. And I will not let anyone take his life, not while I have breath." He closed the journal and let out a sound that was half sob, half prayer. He had been blind, terribly, irrevocably blind, and now she might die before he could ever beg her forgiveness. On the third morning, the fever broke. Alara's lashes fluttered and she opened her eyes to a world blurred with exhaustion. The first thing she saw was Alexander. He looked wrecked, his cravat undone, his cheeks hollow, his eyes red-rimmed. For a moment she could not comprehend. Then he leaned forward, his voice raw and shattered. "I know everything," he said. "The letters, the attack, your arm." His hand hovered over her bandage as if she were made of glass. "You saved my life and I treated you worse than a stranger. I have no right to ask for your forgiveness, but I will spend every day of my life trying to earn it. I love you, Alara. I think I have loved you for a long time, and I was too much a coward to see it." She stared at him, her heart stumbling over the impossible words. A single tear slid down her cheek. "You love me," she echoed, her voice a fragile whisper. "More than my own pride, more than my own life." He lifted her hand and pressed it to his lips. I married you for all the wrong reasons, but you stayed. You fought for my home, for my people, for me. And I will spend the rest of my days making sure the whole world knows what a precious, extraordinary woman you are, if you will let me. She was weak, but a slow, tremulous smile curved her lips. She had never stopped hopping, not truly. And now, the man she had loved in silence was looking at her as though she were the sun breaking through a storm. You have a great deal to make up for, she murmured, her voice slightly stronger. I do, he said, and a ghost of his own smile, so rare and heartbreakingly beautiful, appeared. Starting with your father's name, I will clear the Fairchild legacy publicly, and I will see my uncle answer for his crimes. Ilara closed her eyes, a profound peace washing over her. Then I suppose I shall have to recover quickly. There is much work to be done. She did recover. Slowly, under the devoted care of a husband who refused to leave her side, the color returned to her cheeks. Alexander personally arrested Lord Mortimer in the Grand Hall, the evidence laid out for all to see. The scandal rocked the county, but the truth restored honor to the Fairchild name. Ilara's father, in his lucid moments, wept with relief. Her sister came to live at Ashford Hall, and the cold, echoing manor began to fill with warmth and laughter. The changes in the Duke were not just private, they were unmistakably public. At the next grand ball, the one that marked the anniversary of their marriage, Alexander Ashford did not dance with Lady Cordelia Vance. He walked through the crowd, his eyes locked on the woman who stood near the marble pillar, the same pillar where she had once been invisible. He took her hand, lifted it to his lips in full view of the stunned Tun, and said, loud enough for all to hear, "My wife is the heart of Ashford. Without her, I would be a hollow man. Tonight, I dance with no one else." He led her to the floor, and as the music began, he whispered against her ear, "No more silence, no more ice, only you." Ilara looked up at the man who had once looked through her, and now could not seem to look away. She saw the regret, the love, the promise of a future built not on revenge but on a hard-won, unshakable devotion. The healing had begun, not just for her but for both of them. And as they swayed beneath the chandeliers, the invisible Duchess became the brightest star in the room, held in the arms of a man who had finally learned that love is not a weakness, but the most powerful force of all. If you enjoyed this story, don't forget to give it a like and subscribe to the channel. Also, let us know in the comments which country you're watching from. Your support means a lot to us. Thank you for watching and see you in the next amazing story.